Hey, what's going on, everybody? It's Friday night at 10 o'clock Eastern Time, a little later for us. It's episode 99 with Dave and Mark from Tone Talk, and we've got an awesome guest. I know he's got many names.
There's a half a dozen at least.
Session Man, we got Uncle Larry, homeschooling.
Little Tommy.
Little Tommy, there you go.
Yeah, little Tom, yeah.
Tom Boy Wonder. Boy Wonder. Yeah, I like that too. That's nice.
Thank you, man.
How you doing, man? Thanks for joining
us. Doing great, man. Thanks for having me on the show, guys.
No, no problem.
Yeah, pleasure.
Awesome. Killer to have you. And Dave, are you in your shop still?
Yeah. Yeah, you know.
What goes on in there all day, Dave?
There's so many amps laying around me right now. It's not even funny.
What about some heavy drinking and gambling? Is that going on in there too?
Well, it's funny. It's funny you bring that up because generally not the gambling part, but funny you bring that up because Pete Thorne and I have decided that we would like to have a bar in the shop.
See,
like a full bar,
a keg. Are we talking beer, a kegerator?
That's always possible.
Right.
And that's probably not going to happen yet. But there's going to be many bottles of things. And, it's funny. There's to the left of me here, there's a TV on the wall up high. So we're going to put the bar right to the left of me here.
Oh yeah.
Literally there's going to be bar stools, the television.
Oh shit. That'll be great for the show.
We're going to actually do some video stuff from the bar.
You're going to do it right.
I love it.
It might even be called from the bar.
Pool table, maybe? What do you think?
We'll take up the whole front of the shop then, but maybe.
Okay.
Never know.
You know, a dartboard's always cool. You can gamble on that.
Could do that.
Yeah. It doesn't take up as much space.
Yeah, well, it'll be a work in progress once it gets going.
Yeah.
So.
When I had a music store for like 3 years, back in the like 2015-ish. And boy, we did some heavy gambling in there, boy. I was the house playing blackjack with all the customers.
Oh, no.
Oh man. We had some good times in there.
That's awesome. Boy.
Yeah, man.
Fun. fun. Hey, I want to thank BV Ninja for helping us set, first of all, for moderating the show for us and also setting this up, helping me hook up with you, Tom. So I appreciate that, BV.
Yeah. Thank you.
And also before we also get started, make sure you guys check out Sweetwater. They sponsor the show. We have an affiliate link down below. If I didn't post it, I will after this video. So click the link and you can buy all your Sweetwater gear there. All right.
Yeah. Your Sweetwater gear. Look at that.
All your Mike Prees. And everything.
Let's wait. You might need a console off our link.
And all your
A Bricosti reverb off our link would be good. So if your guys are in the market for any of this high end stuff, please feel free to do it off our link.
$100,000 pair of studio monitors.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, look at you got all the comments over here with
you see them?
Yeah.
Yeah.
My glasses, so here it is.
We will get to the super chats. Let me see. I think I
super chat. What's that mean?
That's the top chat. I think you know about this, Tom. Hey, Tom, love your show. I love what it turned into. Cheers. Thanks, Mark and Dave, for all the great shows.
It all started as a joke, you guys. It was never supposed to be anything serious.
So how did it start? So what was it? You just quarantine start?
Remember how, I've told the story a time or two, so if you've heard it already, forgive me. But it's the first day of quarantine in Nashville was like a rainy, depressing Sunday. I remember, and I had this conversation with this old buddy of mine named Steve Marcantonio, who's a legendary recording engineer. And, he was all bummed out and he was like, what are we going to do, Tommy? What are we going to do? And I was like, oh man, we talked for a while. And right when we were hanging up, he goes, you know what you ought to do? You ought to go play some guitar and put it on YouTube and cheer people up. And I blew him off. Like I blow everything off like that. Cause I've always been afraid of cameras. I'm not real comfortable like around video cameras and things like that. I've never been the type to do that type of thing. And, but hours after we talked, I just started thinking about it, and I just went out in my garage and I made the first one of those silly videos. And this is before anybody was putting up those home videos, you know, like everyone started doing, you know, sessions from home, and like nobody was doing it when I started doing it. And I did it like a couple, and the response was right out of the gate was just so like overwhelming, you know, like I was like, wow, I was not expecting people to like it, you know. And so I just started thinking maybe I should just keep doing this, because I don't have any home recording gear. I'm the only session guy in Nashville that doesn't have a home studio. So I would have gone fucking crazy if I didn't have anything to do the whole time during quarantine. So it was actually quite a gift that I found something that I could actually occupy my time with, you know. So it took, you know, an hour a day or whatever to do these little videos. And I just was doing one like every day because there was just no work. There was nothing to do, right? And it's just all these jokes and the little gags that came from the show, all the Uncle Larry shit. It was all just total random bullshit. It was never planned out. I could have never sat and, you know, planned it out. It was a total, you know, it's sort of just came out of nothing and this organic sort of thing, you know? And then when I started, you know, doing it, like all these heavy hitter YouTube guys, like Tim Pierce and Rick Beato and all those guys that I actually knew Tim previous just from being a player. Right. And they were all like, man, you gotta keep doing this, man. It's great. And they gave me a lot of great advice in the early days, cause I didn't know shit about YouTube. I didn't know what content meant or like what a subscriber was. I didn't even know. So, those guys helped me a lot. Like Robert Baker, you know, and he gave me a lot of advice.
Oh yeah. Robert's great.
So, hey Robert, if you're watching, but man, a lot, you know, and I've actually, I think I, one of the things I did right was I weeded out all the knuckleheads early on my channel because I started playing all this insufferable prog music, like old Genesis and shit. And anybody who, you know, could stick through that, they were like forged in iron, you know, and I've got this fan base of people that, you know, they're into like old Genesis and Yes and shit, stuff that would run most normal people off. And so I've got a pretty cool little fan base of guys, you know?
Yeah, you're growing a great channel. It's fantastic.
It really is.
I mean, how many people did you, when you started the channel, Brent, at the start of the pandemic?
Well, you know, now, I had probably put up like, you know, before I started doing this over the course of like 20 years, I put up about 10 videos total, just noodling around, you know, goofing around in my garage or something. But I had seen people like Tim Pierce told me years ago, he goes, man, you should just do your own YouTube channel. And it was like, it might as well have been talking like, you know, a different language to me. I didn't understand. I didn't know. Cause I'm so old school, sort of like caveman Luddite. I'm just like, I thought you still had to like make go tour to be famous. You know, you can actually do it other ways now. And I didn't even know that. Right. Social media. Cause I don't have any Facebook or Instagram or any of that shit. You know, I don't even, you know, pretty old school guys.
Yeah. Well, you're not missing much.
Oh man.
Yeah. You're definitely not.
But I'm enjoying this whole YouTube thing. It's a trip, man. It's like, I've learned a lot. All the guys that watch my show, they send in really cool, like, you know, stuff for me to listen to, you know, like turn me on, because I got pretty eclectic taste in music, and they'll get even way weirder than I will get. And they send me cool stuff that I would have never found on my own. It's a really cool thing, you know?
Yeah.
We're all helping each other, right? You know? Yeah.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Hey, I want to, this is cool. Richard Friend, Mark, I thought you'd get a kick out of this. Huge fan of the show. I'm a comic book artist working with Joe Satriani on a comic book version of his album, Crystal Planet. I love Tone Talk. Never miss it. How cool is that? Very cool.
Wow. Man.
Yeah.
Crazy.
That's awesome for you, Mark.
Yeah, I love that stuff. But yeah, you know, it also ties in Joe Satriani, who's, you know, super cool too. So that's cool. We already have a ton of super chats already. I want to like get to them and not miss them because that's easy to do.
Do them.
Patrick Miller. Checking in from Youngstown, Ohio.
Oof.
Been a homeschooler since day one. My two favorite YouTube channels have united I'm a kid on Christmas. I love it. That's cool. Thanks, Patrick.
Awesome, man.
Thank man, you. I'll tell you, you ever been to Youngstown, Ohio, boys?
No,
I have not.
Man, I used to go down there and rehearse in these heavy metal bands when I was a kid. It was scary back in the old days, man. Wow. I heard that. I heard they cleaned it up a bit around there, but it was a pretty rough town, man. Back in the Patrick, is it still rough? Tell us.
I'll look for his response.
Mm-hmm. All those guys are cleaned up now.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, all through the rust belt there.
Oh, man. Let's see what we got here.
Hey, Tom, before becoming an A-lister, did you focus at all on being a version of many other players, an adapter, or are you more of a singular voice being hired for your unique style or somewhere in between?
Well, you know, I don't think you can even call yourself a serious session man on any instrument unless you know the language, right? I mean, there's basically certain primary colors that you have to be able to deliver, right? You know, if somebody wants to evoke the emotion of Jimmy Page or Mark Knopfler or Dave Gilmour or Pete Townsend or you know, Albert Lee or, you know, anybody you could think of, you got to be able to at least get in the ballpark, right? Because that's the thing. Like, they'll say, I want it to feel like this or like that. And if you don't know any of that language, if you can't even get them in the ballpark, you're not a session man. You know, you got to be able to cover a really large. I mean, that's the thing about being a session guy. You don't know. You have no idea what you're going to be doing from one day to another. It's so incredibly different. I mean, like one day you're playing these like super like old school traditional country, and that's a whole language that you got to know. And that language is hard to learn to make it sound legit and make it sound real. And then you could be playing like heavy rock. You could be playing like metal. You could be playing blues. You could be playing acoustic shit. You just never know what you're going to be doing. And man, you don't want to be caught with your pants down, man. There's nothing worse than someone saying, I need this feeling and you don't know how to do it. It's a terrible thing. So, you know,
get a call back.
Yeah. Being a session man is really not about having your own unique voice. You know, it's never has been for anyone. I mean, it's great when you can bring something unique to the table. But a lot of times being a session man is like being able to play whatever these people want, you know, whatever emotion they want to feel on their record, you got to be able to go there. You know what I mean? And the learning curve is just so incredible that it's a wonder anybody ever gets there. Cause there's just so on every instrument, you know, you got to be able to do that on drums, piano. Right. It's just crazy, man. You know? And these guys, like these guys around here, like when you start getting into like the high level cats around here, the versatility that these people have is just mind numbing. It's like, there's nothing you can throw at them that they can't play. It's crazy. And you got to hang, you want to hang in that bunch. You got to know some shit, you know?
Yeah, that's for sure.
But it's cool. I always feel like I'm the weakest guy in the band. Always.
I think a lot of people feel that way.
Yeah.
By the way, cheers. We haven't done that.
Cheers, man. Let's cheers.
Oh, shit. I'm empty.
Yeah. I want to say hey to my cartage guy, Richie. I know he said he was going to be watching the show. Hey, Richie. What's up, dude? My main man, my cartage ninja.
Cool. All right. Mm-hmm. Cheers to Richie.
Right on.
I also want to make sure that we talk about Trip the Witch. That you're working out with Dean DeLeo.
Yeah,
so we'll get to that because what a great player he is. Dan Pfeiffer, big fan of Tone Talk and Homeschooling, have been a fan of both since the start, was subscribed to Tom when he had 900 subs.
Right. So,
Tom, a sincere thank you for your channel this last year. Still use that green synth wah pedal?
Oh, no. I mean, I thank you, first of all, for the kind words. Man, no, I don't have one of those anymore. But that was a fun pedal. I mean, God, I go through so much shit. Go through years. I swear, like people say, like, do you still have that pedal? I'd be like, I don't know. I have to look. I don't
know. Right. I may have sold that like 3 years ago.
But then there's another part of me, too, that like at this age, I'm 52. now, like, then I look down and there's some things that I've just been using the same shit forever, right? Mm-hmm. There's certain core things that are always going to be there. Like, if I don't have them, I feel like I can't do what I need, you know?
Like what? Just like,
well, you're like basic food groups, like, you know, like a humbucker guitar, a good humbucker guitar, a good single coil guitar, but like when it gets to amps, I feel like there's three primary colors. There's the EL34, the 6L6, and like the EL84 thing, right? And like,
yeah,
they're like yellow, blue, and to me, like the primary colors. And you got to have those, and you got to have, your whatever basic pedals you need. Like for me, it's just a good overdrive, a good delay, and an EQ pedal, right? And I've been using the same shit forever. Like I've been playing those old Nobles ODR1s, you know, since 1992. Yeah. And I was the guy that introduced all the other guys around here to those things, because like they were totally unknown like in the early 90s. And I was using like a Tube Screamer like everybody else was back in those days. And I found that thing and I thought, man, this thing is way better than a Tube Screamer. And I started showing it to all my buddies and everybody started using them, man. And they used to be $40, man, brand new.
Yeah, I remember.
I mean, the guy used to send me boxes of them, like, and I would just give them to all my friends because they were so cheap. And you see what those things are going for now?
Yeah. They're like
$300-$400 now. I can't believe that. The original ones.
Yeah, the original. They're hard to find, actually.
Yeah, it's crazy. But I don't know if you ever used one, but that's a fucking great pedal. I mean, I see why they should be that expensive. And then you got to have your Boss EQ or whatever EQ you like. And like when it comes to like a delay pedal, I mean, I've tried every one you could possibly imagine. I'm a big fan of tape delay. You know, I've been using Space Echoes and Echoplexes. But when it comes to a pedal, my favorite, I say this over and over, the best delay pedal that I can ever been able to find is a Strymon Bombardier, no matter how much money you spend. It's just something about that pedal, it just delivers, and it's so satisfying, and it always does what I want it to do. And it's very simple, and it's not tricky. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So you guys got one of those?
Strymon Brigadier does the modulated delay, like Memory Man kind of stuff also.
Yeah.
And the El Capistan is also
a great
if you want more specific Echoplexy stuff too.
Yeah. You're great, man. Both of those are great.
See, I haven't tried the Strymon stuff. I've been like hooked on the Boss DD500 and, you know, using that as a...
Yeah, man. Well, who doesn't love the Boss pedal? I mean, right?
Well, it's a little different if you're going to use the pedals in front of an amp, or you're going to use them in a loop of an amp, or, you know, the Boss one is really great for the loop of an amp. But, you know, if you're going to pick pedals in front of an amp, I mean, the Brigadier, the El Capistan's great. Even the MXR Echoplex pedal, little tap with the tap button. That thing sounds great also in front of the amp.
That's what Joe Walsh was using when I played with him back in 2017. He loved that Echoplex pedal. That was his favorite delay. I don't think I even have one of those. I need to get one of those, man.
That's good. Really cool. Good.
Right? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Really close to that kind of melting in Echoplex sound, that kind of melts in.
Man.
If the amp's already distorted, it kind of melts into it nicely.
Oh, yeah, man. Totally.
I'm gonna have to pick one up.
You need one of those, man.
Yeah, totally. Clubhouse, thanks for the super chat. Supplementary question here. How did Nashville become a preeminent music capital and remain so? Please know, well, why in the hell not? Answers.
Man.
Well, why not? Why not? Why not
if you've ever, I don't know if you guys have ever gone down the rabbit hole, but the history of music in this town is just crazy, man. I mean, I don't know if you guys have ever spent any time with that Ken Burns documentary, Country Music. Man, it's like an 8-part DVD set that explains the whole thing from the beginning. You ever seen it? It's crazy, man. Oh, man, it's like, it explains in great detail the history of this town and all the amazing music that's come out of here, you know, over the years. Tells you who influenced who and what led to what. And it's, if anybody out there has not seen that Ken Burns Country Music documentary, it's fucking awesome, man. You definitely got to see it. I mean, all the stuff he does is incredible, but there's just a real rich, you know, history of music here. And, you know, it was one of the early, you know, sort of places where there was a lot of studios condensed in like Memphis or Bakersfield or LA or New York. It just had or Muscle Shoals. It had a sound of its own, you know, and there was a whole scene happening here with the producers and the players and people wanted to be a part of it. There was a lot of really great, you know, early pioneers like Chet Atkins and Owen Bradley and all these people that did amazing things. And they built an amazing community of studios like down on Music Row where people were just coming through and cutting records and having big hits, you know. Different sound than the Memphis sound or the Muscle Shoals sound or the Bakersfield sound, but it was its own thing, you know, and it's there's something, you know, they call it Music City for a reason. It's like, when I grew up in Cleveland, right? And when you told somebody you were a musician up in Cleveland, they would laugh at you and say like, yeah, what do you really do? You know, like the job of being a musician is not really respected in other places, but you come to Nashville, like people respect musicians. Like I always think of Nashville as sort of like a giant state park preserve for music. You know, people care about like these ancient forgotten forms of music here that nobody cares about anywhere else. And it's music is sacred and it's very like respected here, man. It's always been like that. And when you get here, you can really feel that, you know. Everybody here knows a musician who's been successful, you know, so it's like, they take musicians seriously around here, man. It's kind of a cool thing. You don't get in a lot of other places, you know?
Yeah. Well, a lot of people are moving their way.
Oh man, the players that come here and the way that people converge on this town, it's just amazing, man. There's so many talented people here, man. And you know, there's other places you can make a record. There's tons of other places, but this is a pretty special place. You know, I just went down to Muscle Shoals and made a record a couple months ago. And that's another place that I love, man. You guys ever go there?
No.
Oh man, there's a vibe down there, man. I seriously consider moving down there one of these days. It's a great place, man.
That's awesome. What were you doing there?
I did a record with Ann Wilson from Heart. We worked on.
Oh, that's what you were working on.
Yeah, and we did half the record there, and then we did the rest in Nashville. And man, just going to Muscle Shoals, man. There's this. I mean, it's really hard to describe how powerful the vibe in that place is. Man. It's amazing. All that shit you read about and you see in those documentaries is true. As soon as you get there, you can feel it. It's a magical place, man. I don't even know how to describe it. I mean, I love Muscle Shoals. It's a special, special place. And so is Nashville. You know, Nashville is changing a lot. It's getting very crowded. You know, when I moved here in 1992, it was I always thought of it as like the best kept secret. Like it was amazing, but there was very few people here. Mm-hmm. Now, 30 years later, everybody's found out about the secret it's really crowded, but it's still great, man. This is a great land of opportunity. There's tons of gigs here. You know, there's all kind of shit you can get involved in musically here. Right. Yeah.
My cousin moved out there. He lives in Franklin
Franklin's great. Yeah.
Yeah. And just, you know, Porch Fest, they've got all these just amazing things that just go on. People sit on, you know, on their porch playing music. Oh, I'll come over and jam with you. You know, like just people you don't even know. It's like, it's very cool.
Yeah. You just got to make it through the summers, man.
It's brutal. Chuck Buskerin. I hope I didn't butcher that. Thanks for doing this, guys. Thanks for the super chat.
Appreciate it, man. Thank you, man.
And then we also have another one from, let me scroll down here. Oh,
where is it? Mutt Lang Session Talk, the guy said. Yeah.
Peter Urban, 3 years into learning guitar at 50 and my two favorite and most authentic shows joined on a sunny Friday night in Calgary. Doesn't get better. Thank you, Mark, Dave, and Tom. Thanks, Peter.
Thanks, Peter.
You're doing well, man.
Yeah, man.
Appreciate that.
Yeah, we really do. I just want to make sure I get to everybody here. So just let me. Super Chicks. What's up, Mark, Tom, and Dave? Hope all is well and cheers, boys. Dave, I got a twin sister combo recently, and it's killer. I've actually been really like, oh, I want a twin sister. Thanks. I've actually been wanting a twin sister.
Who doesn't want twin sisters?
I was going to say since I like was 14. Yeah. thanks for making such an awesome app. That's cool.
Thank you.
Thanks, super. Nice. Yeah, that's great. So how's it to work with Ann Wilson?
Oh man, she's amazing. God, I mean, I grew up on that shit. You know?
Yeah, right.
Hard record. She's great. I mean, she's just man. I mean, I got thrown into the role of like producing the record, right? So like sitting behind the console with the engineer, and she's out there in her vocal booth, and you dream up some idea you want her to try, and have that instrument, you know, in there. She's got such a powerful sound, man. And she's a very cool person. I mean, we're having a ball. I mean, we're taking this band on the road to do a few gigs. We had so much fun in the studio making this record. She was like, you guys want to come play some gigs with me? So we're going to do like four gigs at the end of June down in Florida. Right. I think we like Orlando and sort of Fort Myers. Was one of them. And there's going to be sort of a trial run just to see how it all goes. But we put together a cool little band and just, but it's kind of weird doing gigs with the COVID thing out there because like, you know, things have opened up a bit, but there's still like a lot of weirdness when it comes to like touring, like the man saying that the venues are not really going to be anything like what we remember from our old days of touring. Everything's changed, very different, right? So we'll see how it goes. And they're not even full capacity and all those things. But, you know, you got to start somewhere. If you want to, you know, it's going to be a little different than it used to be, but got to get out and play again, right?
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm. Definitely. Well, you're starting in the right place, Florida.
So, right. I mean,
yeah. No rules, Florida.
Everybody's right. Open there.
Yeah.
So, oh, look who, we've got a surprise guest actually.
All right.
Who's joining us? Can anybody guess who's joining us? I'm not going to. There he is, Mr.
Hey, Corey.
What's up, dude?
So, man, I've wanted to meet you for so long. So,
dude. It's, who are you talking to?
Hey, honestly, I'm such a homeschooling fan.
Meet Pete. Nah, dude, how you doing, man?
Oh, you know what? I committed the carnal sin. I've got the YouTube window open, so I got to turn that. Okay, there we go. I had the echo going
because Mr. YouTube is fucking up on YouTube.
Pete, you got a drink, man? You got to have a drink to be a part of this. There he goes.
Scotch too.
Cheers, dude. Yeah. What a pleasure. No, seriously, I've been such a fan for ages. And I love what you do. You kept me going through the pandemic.
Yeah. You got it, man. It's a crazy world out there, this YouTube thing. I didn't know nothing about it, man.
Well, maybe that's the best thing about what you do. Right.
How long have you been doing this, Pete? You've been doing this
a long time.
Yeah. I mean, I started 2008 or something, 7 or 8. Yeah. And then I got more serious about it like maybe 7 or 8 years ago. But I love that you got involved in that. There's so many. I mean, we saw all these guys like Eric Johnson and, you know, Steve Vai and all these people start putting up all this great stuff.
Yeah.
It was I just love watching your show. It's great.
Dude, I appreciate that, man. That means the world. Thank you.
You very much. Absolutely.
Sorry. Dude, I stole a bunch of licks from you, too. I don't know. I hope you don't mind.
Oh, man. I think I stole more from you.
But man, you know what I love about it too? It seems like the whole YouTube thing is like, it reminds me of like the old days when people were just like claiming like thousands of acres of land out west. It's just wide open, right?
It's the Wild West. That's what I would say.
This million acres, this is mine now. And there's so much room for everybody. Like the session world is not like that. The session world is very sort of, man, you really got to bust your ass and work really hard to like break into that thing. But YouTube thing seems like there's just enough room for everybody to, because like people just like to sit and watch videos. It's like, How could, there can't be too many people doing it, right?
Well, you don't have a wall to get through. You've got a direct connection to folks. So if you've got something to say that people are interested in, it just grows organically. Whereas in the session world, I was actually going to ask you about that. About Nashville, about the, you got there, you mentioned in the early 90s.
And, yeah, it was like, 1992. Yeah.
And I know many folks that, you know, moved out there and then they leave, you know, because they can't quite, they just can't put it together.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't want to leave Cleveland. I was scared to death. I was 24, living, you know, still living up there. And I was playing in all these cover bands, like for $60 a night, you know, playing fucking 3 hours sets, you know. And I mean, it's that's a tough living, you know. And I was like, I always knew I wanted to do something professional. I didn't know what exactly, but I always felt like I was like the only guy in all the bands that I was in that was actually listening to the other guys in the band. Did you always feel like that when you're a kid,
like maybe I need to grow beyond the scene sort of?
No, I've noticed a common trend amongst a lot of the people that end up converging and moving to Nashville. It's like, they always say, like, I always felt like I was the only guy in my cover bands in my hometown that was listening to the other players.
Okay.
Right.
You know,
right.
Like I would say stuff to the guys like, man, that was cool how you changed that part in the second chorus, you know, and they'd be like, what? I'd be like, no, that you didn't, yeah, it was different than you normally do it. They'd be like, what are you talking about? Right. Like, but to be a real player, I always say you have to have total full court vision, man. Like, you have to be able to play what you're playing so sure, but mainly focusing on what everybody else is doing, right? That's, I always say it's like birds flying in formation. Like, when you, the session thing around here, it's like you'll have five or six guys playing and one guy changes one little thing and everybody else is all over it, man. Wow. It's just amazing how intensely everybody's listening to each other. And I always felt like, you know, I was doing that even when I was a kid in like bands, but I didn't know what that could lead to or whatever, you know, I didn't know what I could do. But when I got here to Nashville, I was like, wow, okay. Other guys were doing that too. Right. It was kind of cool. Right. To see, but man, I'm glad I took the chance, you know, or took the leap to move, because, you know, God knows what I would have been doing if I stayed up there. But I told myself I'm gonna go for 1 year, and if I can't get something going, I'll just come back home. That was the only way I could talk myself into doing it, right? So I did that, and then like in the first 3 months I was on some road gig. I mean, I got a gig, I was on a tour bus, and I was, you know, and I was never looking back after that, you know, because it's pretty easy still to this day to get a road gig in Nashville. If you can play and you can sing or whatever, I can never sing, but if you can play and sing, and you can get on a touring road gig pretty easy still in Nashville. There's like a million bands that are home based out of here. They go off and do their summer tours, and you know, and that's may not be great money or whatever, but at least it's a professional gig, right?
Sure.
There's tons of those, man, up until COVID, of course. But up until that point, there was like a million gigs. But I'm sure it'll be back to that eventually. But I always thought that was cool about Nashville, is that there's plenty of opportunities. Now, the road gig thing is kind of like where you start. And then if you wanted to get into the studio thing, that's a whole nother thing. Mm-hmm. That's where like all the real players go, right? Because once you're done with the road gig thing, then you sort of graduate to the studio or whatever. And those gigs are a lot harder to get, but the road gigs are plentiful, and they're still, you know, I feel like they're still plentiful. It's like, I get people calling me all the time saying, man, so-and-so is looking to put together a band of young guys, go out and tour. You know anybody, you know any young guys? And I'm like, hell, I don't even know any young guys, man. I'm like, all my buddies, I'm so old now. All my buddies are so old. But
that's amazing insight. I mean, that you just, then this is why we watch you, because that's an incredible answer to my question. Like, I mean, really, like the ability to listen to other players can set apart, you know,
that's step one. That's the most important thing you can do. I mean, like when I always equate it to pro basketball, like or football, when you see those guys on the court, they know where every guy is. They don't even have to look.
Sure.
That's what it is. Like when you get with players at this level, I mean, these guys are so good. Like you play the track one time, right? And there may be a couple of moments where somebody clashed with another guy, like a guy went for a lick and the other guy went for a lick at the same time. But then no words even have to be said. And on the second take, all that shit is fixed. Mm-hmm. Subconsciously, everybody knows what happened on the first take that they need to change, what didn't work on the first go down, and then it instantly heals itself on the second take. And no one ever has to say a word, man. Mm. It's fascinating. That's like great. How deep that listening to each other is, you know. Now, I will say I've been on a few sessions with some sort of, you know, sort of guys who don't really subscribe to that. They're not the greatest players, and those can be frustrating because, you know, when you first start playing your instrument, you're just trying to get your part right, you know, and you're not really good enough to like get your part right and listen to what everyone else is doing intensely. So some of these guys, I think they're still trying, like when you're up and coming, you don't really got it down yet. You're just trying to get your part, but you're not really noticing what everybody else is doing like as much as you should. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Those sessions can be frustrating to be on when I feel like people aren't listening to each other and it drives me nuts. So I'm just like, come on guys, what are we doing here? You know?
Right. It's supposed to be a conversation.
Yeah. It has to be a conversation, man. And all the best shit I've ever done and all the best people I've ever played with, it's always like that, man. It's just people intensely listening to each other
and feeding off of each other.
They notice, they change one thing, you notice, you know? Yeah.
You're talking about a really interesting world. That's like, it's the world of where you got a chart or you've heard, you know, a demo or something. Right. And you're just getting the song together and then it organically turning into something and there's the take. And that's a thing that not a lot of, it's very few musicians that live in that world where a lot of musicians are, you know, do cover bands or are sidemen on the road, a lot of stuff like I've done and stuff, but that thing you're talking about where you take this thing and there's nothing there yet. And then you turn it into this thing and everybody contributes their little,
It's like watching, I remember years ago, you know, watching, you know, like Lukather in the studio and in his heyday with Jeff Beccaro on drums and one of several different bass players, and they're all play together all the time.
Right.
You know, they were on sessions at that point and all the time together.
Sure.
Those guys could just, you know, be blindfolded and be like, knowing what everyone's going to do and where everyone's going and the speed at which they come up with things. I mean, watched it before where it's just guitar overdubs, right? But, you know, they play Luke the track, you know, and it's like he listens to it for one little take. He goes, I know what I'm going to do.
Hmm. Yeah,
and then you watch him play the perfect part.
Yeah.
Off the cuff. That wasn't even charted out. It was just like they were asking, well, what would you do here?
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Boom.
Yeah.
Boom. I mean, perfect.
You know, sometimes people listen to these records and they think, oh, you know, that's not that hard. I could play that, you know. but the thing is, you don't realize is that, yeah, you might be able to play that, but that guy wrote that.
That guy invented that.
In like two takes.
Right.
And that's, you can play it, but could you, in the heat of battle, write it,
compose exactly.
Dream of it, hear it, and execute it.
Right? I mean, execute it.
Dude, right. That's the part that people don't understand. That's where the real art is, man.
That's what they're paying you for.
These people, they don't come in and say, well, here's the part I want you to play. It's never write it. They'll give you the song, and it's like they'll give you a sketch of the song, but they don't tell you what they want the guitar to do. So you have to just take what they got and you got to come up with a cool guitar part. And man, it has to happen fucking fast, man. Mm-hmm. There's no time to fuck around, man. And it's like, it's all fun and games. And Nashville guys, I'm sure like everywhere else, a lot of joking around, a lot of really quick witted sort of funny people. They're joking around all the way to the count off, man. And then when that count off happens, it's fucking stone cold killers, man. Everybody's like, jokes are over and everybody's there and they're totally invested in the track. And then it's over and it's back to the jokes.
Right.
That's great. Now, do you work with the same people all the time? Like same bass player?
I was telling Mark yesterday, Nashville's like a giant band with interchangeable members. There's like 100 guys, like 20 drummers, 20 guitar players, you know, 20 keyboard players that you're going to see on like basically every session. And it's just going to be a jumble of those guys. And they all speak the same language. Everybody knows each other. They all know the same jokes. It's very cool community, you know? And like, you know, you're just lucky if you can get on that list, you know, to be right. one of those guys, right? And there's like a million studios, and a lot of people have studios in their houses, you know. There's a lot of corporate big studios, and you never know where you're going to be working. See, I've obviously, I'm sure you know this too, with COVID, and even if you factored out COVID, big trend towards like recording at home remotely, right? I used to have a killer studio in my house, but I don't even have a studio anymore. And I'm like the last guy that doesn't have a studio. So like I'm missing a ton of gigs that I could be doing remotely at home, you know, for people. But like people say, dude, you do tracks at home. And I'm like, I don't have a studio. So if it gets real serious, I have some buddies that I can go over to their house and do it. But I'm missing so many gigs just by not having a remote rig. So I got to fix that problem.
Yeah, absolutely. Got to get that set up. Get
it, like a little four track or something.
Yeah. Little Fostex, an old Fostex.
Yeah. You do a lot of remote recording, Pete, for people that.
Yeah. I mean, I do not like you, man, because I've done some studio stuff and I've gotten in scenes over the years where I've been like a guy, you know, for this producer or that producer, but then I've always gone on tour, and then you know what happens you leave and then you're not that guy anymore. So I've made majority of my living being a touring guy, really, but I do a lot of sessions out of this room. Yeah. I mean, you know, define
you're
a lot.
Smart. You got your own studio.
Yeah. Well, it became, I guess, necessary with the YouTube thing. And I was inspired by Tim, actually, Tim Pierce, a lot by his, you know, all the amps and everything on a switcher and the ability to kind of get all the sounds and then have people just send me, I guess the remote thing, have people send me tracks, because that became a thing in LA where there's just fewer and fewer studios. So Tim was a real visionary with that.
Do you notice a lot of LA guys moving here to Nashville? I've noticed a lot of them coming. You had a lot of friends that moved?
Over the years, that was what I was mentioning actually earlier, was they'll go there and then many times a lot of them will come back. Now, some of them don't. My friend Stuart Mathis, I think, is still out there. And he was great.
I know Stuart. Great.
Yeah, sweet guy and really terrific. So I remember when he went, but he was so good, you know. So yeah, I would say, a lot of people move for various reasons. Just LA it's so expensive. And and also the gigs and it just, you know, there was a lot of reasons, but
I don't know how you all do it, man. I don't know how you all pay those bills. Holy shit.
It's a lot, but I like
it's a lot.
My gosh.
Yeah.
Yeah. I want to jump into some of these tone talks. Okay. Tone talks, the super chats.
I'm going to grab a quick beer. It's my fridge is right here. You see it?
Yeah. Go for it. That's convenient.
Well, wait, as you're doing that, and then I'm going to refresh my drink too.
Okay. Vic Terrible. Thanks, guys. Love the show, Tom. Watch them both. Dave, my number one guitar is a Freedman Vintage T. What would need to happen for Tom to get his hands on one of those? He just probably needs to ask.
A Vintage T, is that a guitar?
Yeah, it's one of Dave's. It's a Freedman Tele style, T style guitar.
Man.
What did I miss?
What I miss?
We should just answer for Dave. If you send Mark $100, you'll get that guitar next week.
Exactly.
It's what I miss. Sorry.
He says his number one guitar is a Vintage T, and he wants to know how Tom can get one of those.
I'll have to come steal it out of the shop there.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's great. Let's see.
Well, I mean, when are you not there, Dave? Would be a good time for me to break in.
The problem is someone's always around here.
I think Pete's always there.
Do you have a security system that I should know about?
We won't say.
Yeah.
Remember when I started doing my silly show, everyone was saying, man, you got to be careful with all that gear in your garage. Somebody's going to break in and steal all that shit.
Yeah. I've heard that before. Or my wife's like, oh, you have to show all your stuff. Like, come on.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
I look at that as that's what insurance is for.
That's right.
Right, exactly.
Hopefully that replace it.
Hopefully that would never happen.
And guitars aren't the only thing I collect that starts with G. I always tell people.
Oh. Not a good idea to break into Tom's house.
Yeah.
Right. Not smart.
Right. Exactly. Right. Right.
Tom, what on Tone Talk.
Let's see.
How come it took so long? Hey, Tom, please play some Slide on future episodes. And Dave, send the guy a BE, huh?
Hell yeah.
Greetings from Rio.
That's funny. Yeah. That's funny. I'm a shit Slide player, man. Do you play Slide, Pete?
I'm terrible. I can play like a little bit of George Harrison style, but then I hear somebody like Ian Thornley or I hear Scott Landreth or whatever, and I'm like, holy, oh my God, you know. But I enjoy it. Like to try, you know, to tackle
it. Yeah. It's fun to goof around. Man, that's a tough thing, man, to get really badass on
that. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. And you almost I respect guys who can it's easier in an open tuning, but I respect guys who can actually do it in a regular tuning. And just
It was great. It's Greg Koch. He's so awesome at it. He can do Derek Trucks thing. Like, and I've never heard anybody else sound like Derek. You know, it's amazing. And he's got a whole, I watched some stuff where he's like fretting with it. You know, so his intonation's perfect, like Derek. God, that was like a YouTube revelation for me.
Yeah,
like,
man.
That's how what about Greg Lease?
Wow. Yeah, I know Greg Lease, man. I played with him several times on stage. He's fucking badass.
He can play a slide and a lap steel, and pedal steel, and acoustic, and
cool guy. I haven't seen him in ages. I love that cat. He's cool. Mm-hmm.
Andy Moss, Tom, late to school, but I'm a fast learner. Enjoying the videos.
Thank you, buddy. Thank you, man. There's a lot of shit to go back and look at, man. I'm like on 106 episodes now.
That's amazing. Yeah.
God.
That's amazing. Yeah,
we're on 99, which we started. Yeah, but that was
like 106 in like a year.
Yeah, I was gonna say 106 in a year.
Do you ever have trouble thinking like a new thing to talk about? Like,
man, you know what's funny? I don't. And but I'll tell you one thing. I don't know if you guys are like this, but man, if I am not in the mood to do one of those silly shows, I don't do it. I gotta be inspired to do it. And I never want to do one where I'm not like in the mood to do it. I would never just do one just to get, you know, I need an episode, man. Weeks could go by. And if I don't feel it, I won't do it, man. And, I'm a pretty, you know, up and down moody guy, man. Sometimes I just don't feel the, you know, I feel like I have nothing to say and I feel like, just, you know, playing like shit or whatever, and I just don't want to like crank out some horrible thing, but then all of a sudden the moment will hit me. I'll be like, man, I'm gonna make a video, and I'll get jazz, and I'll have some shit going on in my brain, and I'll go make one. And they're very spontaneous. Like it could just be literally like, because when I take my boys to school in the morning, every morning, and they're like little musicologists, man. I'm playing endless. I mean, these guys know more shit than you wouldn't even believe how much music these guys know, and they're 8 and 5. And I'm playing all the classics, and they know, you know, all this crazy shit. And I'll be playing them songs, and I'll hear something. I'll be like, "Fuck, man, I've got to go in detail on talking about that." Like this morning, for example, since we got 90 minutes, I was listening to Marshall. My 8-year-old was asking me about the Doors, and I said, "I'll play some Doors, man." I played them like. People Are Strange, and then I played them Love Me Two Times, and then I played them Riders on the Storm. And I was just listening to that, really. I listened to the whole thing, Riders on the Storm, and I was thinking, man, fucking Robbie Krieger, man. He's totally underrated, man.
So underrated.
His touch, man. And he was probably like 25 when he played that, and it's just so like mature.
And you know, he'd only been playing when they started, he'd been playing like 6 months. Or something.
Yeah,
he was a brand new guitar player.
He blew me away, man. His touch, man. Riders on the Storm. I know it's 6 minutes. It's all that shit, but there's some fucking badass guitar playing in that. And Zarek is a freak musician, man.
Yeah.
They don't get enough credit. The Doors get slagged by a lot of people. And I know they're very polarizing, you know, but man, they were really good players. And Johnny Densmore, man, his pocket was sick. That was a good band, man.
Oh, and you know them as soon as you hear the song. It's they're so unique.
Man. That's a good band. Totally.
When the Music's Over. That song is.
Amazing shit, man.
I get to do a session actually for Franklin Vanderbilt, who's Lenny Kravitz drummer at Robbie's studio about 2 months ago. We went and recorded a bunch of tunes there. It was great because he's got all kinds of memorabilia on the walls and all kinds of
pictures.
But, yeah, it's really cool.
Yeah, I heard he's a sweet guy, man. Yeah.
I didn't get to meet him, unfortunately. But I have met him once before, though. He was at a jam at the Lucky Strike once in Hall.
Oh, cool.
I met him just really briefly that night, but it was cool. He's out and he gets out and plays, and it's cool, you know.
Seems really nice. He was actually during quarantine, he was doing a couple videos.
Yeah.
A couple lesson videos.
I saw those, man.
Yeah.
It was crazy to show you the right way to play some of his classic shit. Yeah.
Yeah, Love Me Two Times.
Michael Parmesan, man. Hey, dude, what's up? Sweet Michael. There he is.
I'm going to jump to Lucas. Oh, I'm going to butcher that. Wojciechowski?
Yeah.
Hey, guys. Uncle Larry, will you come to Poland after this whole craziness? My dream is to sit after your gig and have a cold beer and listen to your wisdom. We have a great bread in Poland as well. Cheers.
Oh, man. That's great, man. Is there any way I could talk you into coming here, man?
I feel a hell of a lot easier, right?
It might be a little easier for me. No, man, that's the homeland, you know, all that. I would love to go there. I'm actually Slovenian, you know. Slovenia is my, and Croatian. I got a bit of that in me. So that I've never been there, but I'd love to go to the homeland one day. I would love to see that stuff.
You can tell from my last name, I have some Polish yes. descendants.
Seems like a good place. You guys, I better jet. I've got to meet for dinner and stuff.
Oh, man, what a treat.
Thanks for joining, Pete.
Thank you for having me,
cool
guys.
To have you, man.
Great to meet you, Tom. And
you too, bro.
Yeah, just terrific. Keep doing what you're doing. I love it.
You too, man. Great to see you, buddy.
Take care.
Take care, Pete. Man. See you, Pete.
Did you see on my last video, I pinned this guy's comment. Some guy was talking about how Tone wasn't in the hands or whatever. And it started this crazy thing. Like there was like a million replies of people going off talking about it. Was started through a little match and it started this giant fire. People talking about their opinions about like what the meaning of Tone is. Not just like what's a good tone, like his tone, his fingers, you know. It started this crazy shit, but man, that's a pretty vast subject, right? If you want to start talking about that. Which we probably don't.
Well, we have, and I think we're all
how do we say this? Tone is very much in the hands.
Yes.
A different tone is in the hands.
Right, right.
Meaning every individual has their own sort of tone, or in some cases, maybe no tone. It's true. Over the years, I remember, you know, playing someone an amp and they go, let me try it, you know, and then, you know, it sounds great. It's great. Let's say it's a great old Marshall or something.
Right.
You know, it's sounding killer. And the person plugs into it and
they can't find the sweet spot, right?
You kind of are looking at it going, man,
yeah.
Did that break?
Right. Right.
Wait, what happened? And it was, I find it interesting because it's really sort of hard to define.
Oh man.
You know, like, so, you know, you have your two hands, you have your fretting hand and your picking hand, and it's really hard to define what it is this person is doing wrong to make that sound come out. I don't know how to actually tell someone.
I notice it a lot on acoustic guitars.
I'll
have a great old acoustic, you know, that a guy like Brian Sutton could just get all this thing shit out. And you hand it to some people and they're like, they just don't know how to touch it, man. And it might as well be like $100 pawn shop guitar because they don't know how to get anything. Tone out of it, you know, it's crazy, right? Tone out of an acoustic is that's big boy stuff right there, man. Right
and there. The, right. I mean, the same thing goes with drummers.
Sure.
You can have the greatest, best tune kit in the world and have someone make it sound awful.
Oh, dude.
You know, and it's just how they hit. Too light, too hard, not hard enough. There's a magic in between, depending on what sound they're going for. Also, you know, it's like, you know.
Well, the thing is, they have to have an ear, also.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
To be able to emit that tone, they have to have an ear to hear it, also. And if they can't hear it, then
right.
At least that's my thought. But Clubhouse, Thanks for the super chat. Been listening to Rolling Stones' first album, specifically Don't Stop.
Stone Roses. Yeah.
Oh, Stone Roses. Did I say Rolling Stones? No. Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. Man, see, that's weird how that happened. Specifically, Don't Stop. You must have played reverse track melodies. What is in your heat of battle process? Approach, dynamics, effects, use, pacing?
Everything. There's so many billion computations happening. It'd be like trying to ask, fucking Patrick Mahomes what he's thinking about when he's, running around getting chased by three linebackers, throwing a touchdown. I mean, it's like there's so much going on, man. It's crazy. Like, it's impossible to explain. I mean, I don't know, man. I watch a lot of sports, right? So I'm always thinking about what's going on in those guys' minds, Because I don't know, I'm a terrible athlete, but I'm fascinated with great, sportsmen, And I'm just, I look at guys playing NFL and stuff, and I'm a huge NFL fan. And I'm just thinking, what the fuck is that guy thinking about when he's making that, like, amazing catch with 1 foot barely in bounds? So I'm just like, like anything in life, man, if you dedicate your whole life to it, man, whatever it is, I don't care if it's a race car driver, musician, whatever. You get to this point where it's like this unconscious thing. Anytime you see anybody doing anything great, it always looks like they're barely doing anything. You ever notice that?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't care what it is, but like if it looks like the guy's trying, he's probably not that good at it, right? That's the fact, man.
It is. They make it look effortless.
No, totally. That goes for anything.
Dusty Dustbin Basement Jam HQ.
That's my guy right there. He puts amazing vocals on one of my songs. He's a talented fella right there.
Oh, that's cool. How did you and Dean record together? Remotely in the same room?
Yeah, I never even met the guy. We're like brothers. We talk every day, and I've never even seen him in person. Isn't that crazy? We made a whole album together. It's so crazy, man.
That's he started wild.
Watching my videos when they first came out, and some mutual friend of ours sort of connected us and we hit it off immediately because we're both closet prog freaks. I've always a huge Stone Temple Pilots fan. I mean, I grew up on that stuff. And man,
I love Stone Temple. Their first album, War, is great.
And I didn't know. I mean, I probably should have realized this, but he's a total Yes Genesis freak as much as I am.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yes Genesis freak and Jimmy Page.
Yeah, man.
I knew Jimmy Page, but I didn't know the prog stuff.
Dude, he's a prog guy just like me. And, man, talk about just the sweetest dude, man. He's got the sweetest soul. He's really, really great dude. Very soft-spoken, intelligent, thoughtful cat, man. And I love him to pieces, man. He's so talented. And what ended up happening is we'd just start sending little riffs back and forth. Like, I'd come up with a little riff, send it to him, like a video. And then he'd go, that's great. What about this bit for a B section? And then I'd go, oh, great. What about this for a C-section? We just started sending all these things back. Before we knew it, we had like, 12 songs, And so I started recording a few, and I would get a drummer and a bass player and get a rough sketch. And then I would send the tracks to him, and he would add some shit. And then vice versa, he would do the same. And before you know it, we had a whole album finished, man. And I definitely don't think this is going to be our last one. I know we're going to do another one. It's so much fun, making this one. So looking forward to getting this first.
Oh, locked up there. Locked.
Yeah.
There we go. There you go. You're back.
Back now? Yeah.
Yeah.
You locked up for a sec.
Okay.
It happens. Rummy, Tom, why is the Nobles Overdrive a thing in Nashville?
Because it's fucking great.
Yeah.
It's great. It's still the best overdrive pedal I've ever heard in my life. I mean, the original ones, there's nothing. I've tried everything, and I still think they're my favorite. I mean, I use others. It's not the only thing I use, but man, that thing's never let me. I've been stomping on those things for 25 years, man. It puts a smile on my face every time.
Now, what do you think of the newer ones?
As far as there's been several variants that have come down the pike later, And they made these minis and things. I don't even know. I got a bunch of the old ones and I just love those. And I feel like, you know, man, that's been working for me all these years. Fucking stay with it, man. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Were you ever a Klon guy?
No, I bought one of those things when they first came out. I saw the ads in the Vintage Guitar Magazine. Remember when Vintage Guitar Magazine was just like a fucking newspaper?
When it was cool?
All black and white. I saw an ad and I ordered one when they were new and I hated it then and I still don't like them. Not my style, man. I never liked them.
I hear you. I mean,
I've heard people do great shit with them. You know, I'm not saying they're not any good or for me, you know?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep, totally. Mm-hmm. Ak Sharma, thanks for the super chat. I don't know if you asked a question. If you did, I'll look for it. Oh, there it is. Hi, Tom. Just got a Satellite T90, Japanese, made from the 70s. I'm sure you have played similar or the same before. Any thoughts on it? Got it at Grunes.
No idea what that is. No idea. Maybe like a telly or what? I don't know.
I don't know either. Do you know what that is, Dave?
No idea.
No idea. But if it's named Grunes, it's probably cool because that's a fucking badass store, man.
Anything. And I'm probably not cheap either.
Yeah, well, they got great stuff, though, man. You been in there?
I've seen the online store. I have not been in person.
Oh, man. They got great stuff. Beautiful store.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, I love all the stuff in Nashville.
I also like Rumble Seat.
Yeah, man.
Carter's.
Yeah.
Carter's, yeah.
Yeah.
More guitars. Thanks for the super chat. Awesome show as always, guys. All four of you. Favorite Friedman amp and favorite Marshall amp. Support the show, folks. It's our thing.
Oh, yeah.
It's our thing. Okay. God. Well, I'll start. Favorite Friedman amp. I'm going to go with the JJ. I like really? The double J.
You don't own one. Well, I guess you own.
Well, I've got the mini. I've got not the mini, but I've got the junior, and I love it. It's great. I mean, it's just I don't know. It's got the sound for me. And favorite Marshall, I'd probably go with from what I owned was a Silver Jubilee. That was a nice amp.
Yeah,
those are mine. Tom, what about you? I know you haven't had a Friedman amp.
I never had a Friedman, but I want to try one. And man, I got a good idea for an amp, Dave. You want to hear it?
Yeah, sure.
Dude, I got it. Dig this. What if you made, you remember the old Marshall Big Pig, the pigs, like Mick Ronson used? 200 watt?
Yeah.
Marshall Major? Mm-hmm. But I'm a huge old Marshall fan, had every variant you could imagine, right? I'm sure you've had plenty more than I have. But what I end up doing with any Marshall is I ignore the EQ controls and I just use the two channel blend to get the EQ, right?
Yeah. How do you set the EQ though?
Bass all the way off, presence usually all the way off, and then half treble, half mid. But what if you just made a fucking badass 100 watt head that literally had one input, but it was already jumped.
Yeah.
Two channels and just a bass channel and a treble channel.
Yeah.
That's all you had. Have you ever done that?
Oh, with no EQ?
No EQ.
I've always wanted to do one that has no nothing. But
wouldn't that be cool? Like a bass channel, and that's your EQ, because that's really what you end up doing with Marshalls anyway. Is you use the bass channel as opposed to the treble channel jumped to get your EQ. That's what I do.
Well, yeah, I mean, I suppose it depends on what exact tone you're going for, but yeah. I don't do much jumping on Marshalls generally. But
oh, really?
Well, no, I understand it for more semi-broken kind of just breaking up a little bit kind of tones. I totally understand.
I'm a big on bassy 30s as well. Same thing. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't jump bassy 30s either. But I get it. I understand. Yes. I understand the point of it.
Yes.
So if I had to pick my favorite Marshall and stuff, so then I don't know if I can pick a favorite one of my amps. That's a problem. there's too many, and I'm not so sure if I have. You know what? I guess if I had to pick one of my favorite amps, I would probably just pick the BE-100 Deluxe because it kind of does a little bit of everything. For Marshall, a 68 50 watt Plexi that I own that's sitting next to me that you can't see, but probably I'd pick that one.
Right.
I've owned everything, JTM 45s, everything. Right. Well, they all have their place. It depends on the tone you're going for again.
Right, right.
And then I also have a beautiful, it's not a Marshall, but I have a beautiful copper top Vox top boost AC30. That's awesome. So.
Oh, dude, yes. I mean, one of the major.
But then again, I'm a fan of high watts too.
Right. Man, I got a little Grey Goose here. I think it's time to take a nip.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Cheers, boys. Mm-hmm.
All right.
Are you guys Mick Ronson fans, man?
Yeah, sure.
Oh, man. He was a big influence on me. God damn. Love him.
Yeah, great stuff.
Another guy I know, Rusty Anderson, plays with Paul McCartney. And yeah. He loves Mick Ronson. That was a big influence on him growing up.
God, man. That's my shit.
Yep.
Okay. What do we got in the old pile there? What do we see?
Oh, we've got plenty. Patrick Miller. Thanks for the super chat. How often does a producer or artist ask you to rip an old school badass guitar solo in a song? And are there any that you've done that stick out in your mind that we should check out?
Man, that happens all the time. You know, people always want solos. You know, I it's funny, you know, I like playing solos, but I like coming up with parts, man. I mean, mm-hmm. I can solo, I can play leads and stuff, but I'm more interested in like building a track and making a track sound cool with like parts, you know, I mean, and layering parts to make it cool. I always put the solo at the end as sort of the icing on the cake. I'd rather, you know, build a nice track with a bunch of cool guitars. And then just the last thing I do is the solo. Right. I think a lot of people like to start with the solo, but to me, that's the finale. Right. But I like to, I like solos that you can remember, you know?
Yes. Melodic
solos. Something that has a theme to it. That's not just some wanking. It's like a part of the song, you know,
like the Eagles or something. Or
sure, man. Yeah. I think a lot of people like those kind of solos, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Totally. Because non-musicians,
right.
They can gravitate towards them. Right. Cause it's not just for the musician. It's also for people who love music. Right. Yeah, it's the song. Frank Picha or Picha. What do you feel are your best or favorite songs? And check out Steve Wilson for some great prog. Okay. Mm-hmm. What do you think your best or favorite songs, Tom?
Oh, when you told me?
Yeah.
I'm a Beatles freak, man. I'm the biggest Beatles freak you're ever going to meet in your whole life, man. since I was a baby, I've been studying that shit. And I'm just a huge, huge Beatles fan. To me, there's Beatles and then there's everything else. And it's always been like that with me. I love Stones, Zeppelin, Floyd, Jeff Batal, Genesis, yes, Queen, Bowie, ZZ Top, AC/DC, all that shit, Cars, Police, Zeppelin. Did I already say that? Here's an album that everybody should know. You ever seen this?
No.
The guy can't even hold it where you can see it. This is in the 60s, a bunch of Nashville session guys got together and made this amazing instrumental record.
Mm.
All these guys that had been playing on a bunch of hit records, they got together just fucking around and making this really cool album. This is badass shit right here. Oh, but I brought out a couple albums for you here.
Okay, cool. I love it.
This is what I've been listening to lately, right? You got to have.
Oh, yeah. Duke, man.
I mean, and this one's been getting some heavy rotation. Tejas, you guys remember that one?
Mm-hmm. Yes, totally.
Fucking badass album.
Yep.
It's Only Rock and Roll. Remember this one? Stones?
Yep. Yes.
A signed copy of Cars Candio. I've been digging that.
Oh, that's cool.
David Robinson and Elliot Easton, you know, the drummer and the guitar player. How about this one?
Let There Be Rock.
Yeah, dude, my favorite AC/DC album, by the way. And I'm a big Tubes fan as well. You guys into that shit?
Oh, yeah, man.
Oh, man. Big Tubes fan.
Yeah. Well, that I think Lukather played on that.
Yeah. Yeah. The later shit. How about this one? 1970.
Oh, yeah. That's classic.
Some good shit, right? What are you guys into? What do you like?
Oh, God. Oh, man. I love Floyd.
Yeah.
You know, when I'm into, like, of course, Van Halen, you know, Rad, like that, that just kind of that hard 80s metal kind of stuff. But I'm a big Zeppelin fan.
Yeah, man.
Huge Zeppelin fan. Geez. I mean, if I went at the Doors, I've got tons of Doors stuff.
Yeah, man.
Like we said, the Beatles, I grew up when I was, even before playing any instrument, I was collecting Beatles albums.
Oh, hell yeah.
You know, I wanted all the albums with the Apple logo and, you know, and all that stuff.
Right.
So yeah, a big Beatles fan too.
Yeah,
but if I went through my iTunes, you know, it's, let's see, you know what album just popped up? Buckingham Nicks.
Oh, dude. That first
Buckingham Nicks album. Yes. Was one of my favorites. By the way, all three of us, I was thinking about this before the show, all three of us are the same age. I think
really?
We're all born in 68, I think.
Wow. Right, Dave?
Yeah. No.
You know, somebody told me tonight, I missed it, should have said something, but at 9:21 this evening, it was a pretty historical moment. It was the 21st minute of the 21st hour of the 21st year. It keeps going on all the way to the century. Did you see that today? Wow.
No,
of the 21st century. It goes all the way to the century, to the year, to the century. At 9:21 was a historical moment tonight. 21st minute. We missed it. I should have said something about it. Yes. But you're all born in 68?
Yeah. Yeah.
Shit, man.
Yeah.
I'm a September baby, Dave.
We're all old.
No,
yeah, we're all old.
So music for me, yes. I love the Stones. I'm a Stones guy more than a Beatles guy. So, and Led Zeppelin was a huge thing for me, like when I was young. There was a time in my life I got into this crazy heavy stuff.
Yeah,
like early '80s, I had this thing there, just like, you know, like thrash metal kind of things, and then. You know, and then it went on to the, you know, 80s era music and, you know, stuff. But, you know, lately I've been going down these tangents and revisiting things. Like, I've been on an Aerosmith kick lately. Like, going back to like Rocks and stuff. And, Rocks is an amazing record. And someone had given me the Rocks Session music. So it's the rock sessions right off the board.
Yeah.
No vocals.
Oh, yeah.
So you can hear all the parts and all the guitar parts and stuff before it was before it was mixed or anything. That's very interesting to listen to.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're like, oh, that's what's going on under the vocal. You know, it's hard. I find
great guitar sounds on those.
I think that Rocks record, the sonics of that rock record were amazing. Also, right. Just like the drums and bass and guitars all sounded unbelievable. You know, so almost like AC/DC Back in Black. You know, too, unbelievable sounding record.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, you know, all the usual subs. You know, Pink Floyd and
right.
What's
your favorite?
It's pretty eclectic. You know,
what do you Animals. Guys? Me too, dude. I'm total Animals guy all the way.
Animals is cool.
Oh, man. There's an amazing video on YouTube that some guy made about the making of Animals. Did you guys see it? Very detailed.
Really?
Very, very, very detailed. Really well done. Like Vinyl Rewind or something like that. One of those.
I'll check it out.
Fucking killer video, man.
I love that. About
the album and the tour in great detail. It's really cool. Yes.
Check it out. Hey,
Robert Baker has something here.
Robert Baker.
How are you? And
he's a big Journey fan.
Just lost it. I think he said, of course, it just moved. Tom, do you ever feel musically empty?
Oh, Yeah, it happens, man. It happens. Yeah, of course, man. I feel empty in all kinds of ways, not just musically, once in a while. If you want to get
all do.
Yeah, man.
We all get there.
And you know, I feel like, you know, the best way to get out of that hole is just by taking a break and listening to some cool records, man. Right? Listen to the shit that made you like music in the first place. And
yeah, that is a nice thing occasionally, you know. Man.
Yeah.
I went down this Billy Squire rabbit hole lately too.
Oh, dude.
Dude, it all started. I was on YouTube or something. And I said,
that concert you posted.
Here's a Billy Squire concert from 81 and one from 82 from Detroit and then one from 81 from Santa Monica Civics out here.
And I just watched on that. Don't say no. How
many I just watched those live shows and just like, God, the guitar tone was.
Dude.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
He's bad. Know?
Yeah, he was great.
You ever had him on the show?
No. Love to have him
on the show, man. I've heard he's a cool guy, man.
Yeah, I'd like to. In fact, I was thinking about that. I'm like, okay, who do I know that might know him?
I know a guy that knows him really well. That used to be his drummer.
Oh, yeah?
You want me to call him and ask him?
Yeah.
Oh, that would be fantastic if you could. Man.
Yeah. I'd love to have him on the show. That'd be cool interesting.
Have on the show.
Absolutely.
Get some real people on there instead of me.
Hey, Carl Engstrom, thanks for the super chat. Tom, love or hate P90s?
Love, man. Come on. It's the most honest-sounding pickup ever made, man.
How could you not love P90s?
Yeah, I mean, if you didn't like P90s, you'd have some major problems.
Purposeful Porpoise, Anthony Phillips versus Steve Hackett. Also, yeah. What do you think of my prog band name? It's my chat name. Cheers.
Yeah, it's idiomatically correct. That's for damn sure. Anthony Phillips versus Steve Hackett. Well, you know, Anthony was gone at the time they made all their legendary records. You know, I mean, I know he was a huge part of the early versions of the band, but you know, by Nursery Crime, he was out. First major album they made. Well, he was on Trespass, I think, but big Genesis fan here.
But you like this stuff with
Steve Hackett. You know, man, one of the highlights of my pitiful career was when I first started doing this YouTube thing. Me and my wife did a version of an old Genesis song, and we put it up as an acoustic duo. I played acoustic and she sang. It was like an old Genesis tune called Ripples, right? From a song that Steve Hackett played on. And man, he sent me an email saying he loved it. I couldn't believe it, man.
Wow, I was
blown away, man. You know, it's like those life affirming moments when your idol actually acknowledges that you exist, you know?
How cool is
that? What a cool thing, man. I couldn't believe it.
I got one here. Mark, you want to do that first?
Good. Do you want to do that?
Someone, Matt Joe, 1982, said, Uncle Larry, talk about working with Mutt Lange.
Yeah. There's another guy talking about working with Dan Huff over here, but that's kind of.
Yeah, let's talk about both.
Yeah. See, I would have never worked with Mutt Lange if it wasn't for Dan Huff. I was doing a ton of sessions back in the day for Dan. I still work with him quite a bit, actually, but back in those days, I was working all the time, and he was Mutt's main guy for a long time. And Mutt asked Dan to do a session, and Dan didn't want to do it. He didn't want to fly all the way. He said, try this guy. And I was sort of up and coming at the time, so I flew over to Switzerland and played on a couple tracks. Well, actually, on one song for Mutt, and we worked on it for 2 days. It was this horrible Shania Twain song that ended up being in some movie or TV show called Men Are Like Shoes. And we worked on the song for 2 days, but he was fucking awesome, man. He was so sweet and so cool, and I learned so much, man, just from hanging around with him, man. Man, what a legend. What a genius, man. I mean, walk right over to your pedal board and start turning knobs, and it's just like, if anybody else did that but Mutt Lange, you'd be like, get the fuck out of here. Right? It's Mutt Lange, and you're just like, yeah, it sounds better when you do it, Mutt.
Whatever you want.
Exactly.
That's a fact. That's a true story, too.
That's funny.
Man, he was cool, man. I mean, I would love to work with him more often, but man, you know, the thing I remember about those sessions, he had this amazing studio, unbelievable studio in Switzerland at his house. And I remember it was just me and him and this engineer guy. And the engineer was this guy who used to be a drummer for the Eurythmics. And he was a Pro Tools wizard. This is many years ago. And I remember the whole studio was just full of flies. There was flies everywhere. Like, you look up at the Pro Tools screen, there'd be like half a dozen flies on it. And I put my coffee down, and within 1 second, there'd be a fly in the coffee. And I looked at Mud, and I go, dude, beautiful studio, but what's up with all the flies? And he's like, oh, it's a horse farm, mate. I can't get rid of them. And there was horses right outside the thing, and there was just flies everywhere, man. It was weird.
Man. Wow. Yeah.
Crazy.
That would gross me out.
No, it was weird, man. Yeah. It was weird.
On the edge of time, Dave, any recommendations for a mod to do a 73 super lead to make it gainier, sound better at more manageable volumes? Not a ton of gain, but like Thin Lizzy or Judas Priest with a treble booster. Yeah.
You can. Why don't you buy a Fryett power station and crank that amp up into the power station? And boom, there's going to be your distortion. And if you want the treble booster sound into it, get a treble booster and boost into it.
Boom.
It's a 73 amp. It'll sound great. It'll be good. And you'll be able to, if you want to crank the piss out of it, you can crank it to 10.
The last year before they ruined them, right, Dave? That's the last year, isn't it?
Yeah, that's a borderline year too. So that year would be, right? That year would be, yeah, maybe circuit board or maybe not.
Right.
Right. I, you know, you can make the circuit board one sound pretty good, but it's a little dark years right in there. 73 to maybe 76. When they switched to the square switches, they got a little bit better again.
Yeah.
But I'm the pre 73 generally.
Me too, man. Yeah.
Give me a 69 or a 70 or, you know.
Mm-hmm. Prices are starting to get crazy, though.
Oh, the prices are insane now. Forget it.
I just bought one yesterday, 6,800 watt super bass.
Oh, cool.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, man, I love that. That's my favorite variant. I have two. I sold one, and then as soon as I sold one, I bought another one.
Is this one better or worse than that?
I haven't heard it yet. I just bought it. I just gave the guy a credit card today. I haven't even seen the thing. It's all there, so hopefully it sounds good.
Yeah.
We'll see.
That's cool. Robert Baker says that your favorite band is Journey.
Yes, absolutely, Robert. I love Journey, man. Robert has this joke. I don't know why. He jokes about Journey, but man, how many hit songs do they have, man?
Jeez. Oh, yeah, a million.
Robert, you need to ease up on the Journey thing, man. Come on.
1963 Telly Rick Berthod. Thanks for the super chat. Mark, you're awesome. Thank you. Dave, thank you for making my Nailer Superdrive 60 sound great. You are the man. Tom, thank you for helping me through these crazy times. Yeah. Tom, is your 335 your desert island guitar?
I always get that question about amps and guitars, right? You know, and I joked about it at my show I played the other night. It's like, if you're on a desert island, you need an acoustic, right? There's no power, right? So, right. I mean, I would just plunk on an old acoustic if I was on a desert island, and hopefully had some rolling rock to go with it. yeah.
There you go.
I love a 335, man. A 335 is, you know, I feel is one of the best electric guitar designs ever made. Mm-hmm. A good 335 is a dangerous weapon in the hands of somebody that knows how to use it, I feel.
It's a great guitar. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Chris Quinn, you have such great tone. I appreciate that, man. Thank you. why would you use a pedal instead of cranking an amp if you have the choice? That's a real question.
Well, that's cool. Yeah, that's good. That's actually a pretty interesting question. Okay. I could do something with that. Okay. So, first of all, I'm going to qualify the first thing right out of the gate. I'm going to open with there. I immediately toss any pedal that sounds like a pedal into the trash bin. Okay, my qualifications for any pedal is that it has to not sound like a pedal. That sounds ridiculous, but you know what I mean by that? Like of the billions of overdrive pedals or things. A music store, we would just try them at a dozen. You know, people would bring in boxes of pedals and I would just go, no, 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 just throw them in the trash. And, but when you any good overdrive pedal that you find doesn't sound like a pedal. You know, there's a few, right? But most of them sound like pedals. And I can instantly, as soon as it sounds like a pedal, I don't use it. And so at that point, you know, I feel like depending on the song or what kind of music we're playing, I choose between that pedal or the tone of the cranked amp. You know, like if it's a certain kind of tune, you know, of course I'm gonna just going to turn that Marshall up and let it do its thing, right? Mm-hmm. But there's a beauty in pedal distortions. There's a different, when you got a good pedal distortion, there's a beauty in there, man. There's colors in those sounds that you can't get from cranked amps, man. And it's like, it's not just a matter of trying to do it at lower volume or anything like that. It's just, there's a beauty in those tones. You know, some of these distortion pedals and boost pedals that people have made just sound fucking great. And they sound better than a cranked amp a lot of times, you know. Sometimes the cranked amp is the thing. It depends on what song we're doing, what the project is. Like, for example, I'm probably late to this party, but a couple years ago, I started using this pedal called a Greer Lightspeed Overdrive. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's a pretty common pedal, $100 pedal that anybody could buy. And man, that fucking thing, man, I love that thing. I mean, there's just something that it does. It's got a real sort of... musical sort of clarity to what it does. That it's like for mild overdrives, it's just beautiful, man. You ever tried one of those Greer Lightspeed?
I have not.
Man, dude, put that on the list. For $100, go buy one of those, man. They're
this fucking show cost cool, me man. So much money. It's crazy.
Oh man, yeah. You know, it's got this sort of. It reminds me, Dave, of like that sort of brassy top end you get when you crank an AC30. You know, it's got that beautiful grinding sort of like thing. It does that, man. Very cool. I think you'd like it.
I always judge pedals for me. If I plug it in and I instantly go, ooh, oh, whoa, wait, what's, whoa.
Right.
What's that?
Right.
Not, oh, well, wait, let me turn the knob. No, no, no. If I instantly plug it in and go, wow, wait, I love that.
Yeah, yeah.
Then it's a keeper.
That's a keeper, right? Yeah.
It's got to grab your attention right off the bat.
It's got to grab my attention right off the bat. Yeah. And I find a lot of pedals don't. A lot of pedals I find are, okay, yeah. Okay, it's a delay. It's delaying. Right. Okay, yeah. Okay.
Last thing we need.
It's chorusing. It's chorusing, I guess. It's
boosting.
But it's not chorusing in a really cool, interesting, juicy way. You know, it's not.
Someone told me that there's over 1,500 active pedal making companies going on right now.
Oh, probably, sure.
Yeah, I believe it.
Yeah, I believe it.
Wow.
And that's not even including overseas.
Yeah, and I'm picky about it. I'm really.
Right.
I just like, yeah, no, that thing sucks.
Yeah. Yep. I want to make sure we cover this. Tom, can you talk about recording with Dan Huff?
Oh, man. Yeah. Okay, good. I got started on that. Dan, dear old friend, man. I've known him for a long, long time. This is my friend Rick. He was watching the kids. Say hi to the people, Rick.
Hey, Rick.
Yo, what's up, cats? How y'all doing?
Hello.
Hey,
man.
Tone Talk, you're on, Rick.
Nice.
Yeah.
Thanks for watching the kids. We appreciate it.
Yeah, man. Cheers. man, Dan is an old dear old friend, man. He's sweet guy, man. I've done a million records with him. Amazing guitar player, amazing producer. Really, really good guy, man. He's got amazing ears. I love working with him because he can explain to you what he wants you to do in very great detail, very specifically. And he'll say, you know, I love that thing you're doing, but just modify it, and he'll make a suggestion that's like very minute, but you know exactly what he's talking about, and you just do it, and he goes, yep, that's what I need. And I love working with people like that know what the fuck they're talking about. You know, he doesn't mince words. He tells you what he wants. And man, it's really easy to work with people like that because he knows how to explain what he needs beautifully. It's hard sometimes to work with people that don't know how to tell you what they want. You know, they just don't like what you're doing, but they can't fix it for you. They can, you know, they're like, I don't know, man, just try something else. And you're like, well, what? You know, but man, Dan will tell you exactly what he likes or doesn't like about what you're playing, right?
Yeah, it makes life a lot easier.
I appreciate that. Yeah.
Makes it so much easier.
Oh, man. So easy. Yeah. He's a great guy, man. I love Dan. You know, he's worked closely with my wife when she was making her records. We're old family friends, man. He's a great dude. Yeah.
I used to do cartage for him.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, man.
Wow. I go way back when he was out here doing sessions.
So. Yes.
We should get him on the show.
Yeah. Sweet dude.
I'd love to have him on the show.
Oh, man. I can make that happen.
Oh, let's do right that.
Now. Yeah.
Let's do that.
Dave,
I would love
that. Yeah, no, that would be great because I haven't talked to Dan in a million years.
Yeah.
And I made his rack for this band Giant.
Right. You guys go way back, man.
Go way back.
How you doing on time, Tom?
I'm cool, man. As long as I can get another beer and maybe take a whiz.
Okay. Yep. Hey, go for it.
See you in a minute.
Okay, go for it. All good. Maybe you can answer. Maybe I'll get to that question next. Well, why don't we just do this? Well, the session man is going to take a break here. First of all, guys, please subscribe to the channel and click the bell. All right. We've got 830 people watching. I want to thank all of you guys. Yeah. A lot of people watching the show. I know a lot of them are Tom Bukovac fans. So thank you for watching, and please press our bell and subscribe to us if you could, and also check out Sweetwater in the link if you're going to buy anything. We got a little kickback on it, so it helps the channel, helps keep us going. We also have a podcast on iTunes, so kind of helps keep that going also. I think this is one of the last days, but check out Sweetwater. Their microphone month, I think, what's today's date? 21st. So it's still going.
Yep.
So
still going. Great for recording gear or whatever you guys need.
Yep.
Yep.
Totally. And there he is.
Boys.
There he is, getting the rolling rock.
Getting another rolling rock. Yes.
You made me want to get the rolling rock I have in my fridge.
Yeah? You got one?
I have one.
Oh, dude.
Okay. All right. Well, I got to get it now.
There you go. Get you rolling rock.
So I'll ask this question of you.
Yeah, man.
Cody Carrick says, Tom and Dave, I just moved to LA and want to break into the scene and start playing. What would you two recommend? So what would you recommend, Tom?
Well, you're going to have to ask Dear Dave that question. I don't know shit about LA.
Nothing about LA.
No, I mean, I go out there occasionally to do the gig here and there, but man, I would hardly profess to know much about it. Mm-hmm. But man, it's expensive. I know that, Cody.
Yeah, no doubt. Mm-hmm. I mean, once shows start coming back again, I was going to say the best way to see
shows. There you go, my friends.
Nice.
Just so happy that I had a couple of these in the fridge.
There you go, bro. This question is aimed at you, Dave. You want to check that one out?
So Cody just moved to LA and wants to break into the music scene and start playing and wants to know what you would recommend.
Oh, wow. Man, I hate to tell you this. It's a hard scene. And right now, I mean, I don't know if there is any scene.
Really?
It depends on what you want to do. Is this original music you want to do? Is this... session work, boy, that's like almost non-existent here. So I hope it's not that. Because really, sessions exist in Nashville. Sessions don't really exist here anymore.
Really?
Not really, man. There's some stuff, but it's mostly private and it's, you know, people sending tracks to Tim Pierce or something, you know?
Right, right.
It's not like it once was. It's a whole different music landscape here now.
Right.
I don't know if I'm the best guy to ask for your, I don't mean to crush any dreams, please. it's a tough town.
I've had guys, you know, old buddies of mine that are LA session players kind of tell me the same thing, but you know, like Aaron Sterling just moved here, you know, grew up in Nashville, but he came to prominence in LA and was an LA guy for a long time. Just moved back recently, you know, when he's playing on a million sessions, you know, he's an amazing drummer, you know, but for him to move back here, it must be something. It's a pretty big decision, I think, for him to do that. But he says he doesn't regret it and he loves it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's not, it's just not the, it's not, I mean, from everyone I've talked to, it's, there's just don't, they're not doing sessions.
Right. Well, everyone says that Nashville is like the last place that people are actually getting in a room playing live music.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
I mean, I do, maybe that is true. I mean, you know, man, I've been here so long, I just never really appreciated it as much as I should, I suppose.
Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. It seems like everything's virtual these days,
right?
The way you know.
Yeah.
Jason Hobbs. Hey guys, Tom, a big homeschooling fan. For a guy who's done it all musically, do you still have any? Do you still have things you want to do musically? Anything you still wish to do musically, or are you completely content where you are today?
Oh, who's content, right? Is anyone content?
No, I'm completely content.
I want to play with Peter Gabriel one of these days. Peter's my guy. He's my guy, man. I want to do a record with him, play with him. I'm just going to put that out in the universe and see what happens.
Hey, why not?
Yeah.
Why
not? Right. Yeah. And if he doesn't want to do it, maybe Sting will.
There you go. That's a good backup.
Yeah. That's my backup. Right. Yeah.
Right. Yellow Truck Productions, thanks for the super chat. I love you guys and Uncle Larry. Tom, could you talk about how you prepared, played Goodbye Trip by a Hat on the jet? I just watched that today. Just Thank watched you, it today. Man. Great playing.
Oh, shit. I was scared to death, man. Okay. that was a long time ago, man. And some dudes I know put together this Jeff Beck tribute concert, and they got all these guitar players to do one song each, and you pick your favorite Jeff Beck song if you want to come and be a part of the show. So I picked Pork Pie Hat because I always loved that track, right? Didn't realize how detailed and involved that thing was. Man, I don't think I've ever worked on any piece of music that long and that hard in my life. I spent a month learning that fucking thing, note for note. I don't know why, because that's not normally the kind of thing I do. And I just wanted to just go up and play it perfectly. Mm-hmm. And everyone was like, oh, you know, there's some comments like, yeah, you should do your own thing with it. But it's like, it was a Jeff Beck tribute concert. I wanted to just go up and play it right. And I flubbed one thing in the middle of it. I nailed most of it. But what a fucking crazy cool track that is, man.
He is a genius.
It's insane, man. The shit, that tone and the shit that he plays on that, just insanely good, man. God.
Blow, Blah, Blow. And Wired, man. Those two freaking albums are just so good.
But man, I worked my ass off on that for noticing. Man, that was hard. It's like,
well, you sounded great.
Thank you, man.
What were you playing through?
Oh God, it was just whatever amp was at the gig. I was like, you get up on stage and play, you know, because everybody just used the same amp, you know. One guy per song, right? I remember bringing a pedal because I had to have the octave thing, so I brought like one of those old octave fuzz pedals, you know.
Right.
I think it was like a Prescription Electronics. Remember those?
The Experience pedal.
Yeah. Something like that. Yeah.
Man, I kick myself every time. I should have. I had a couple of opportunities to buy that pedal at 30th Street Music in New York.
Yeah. What's the one piece of gear you've sold in your life you wish you had back? Anything. Guitar, amp, pedal.
Oh, man.
I had a 55 or 56 Tweed Champ. I bought for $500, and then within a year I sold it for $500, and now I kick myself. I should everybody should have a Tweed Champ, you know.
And a 1960 refin Strat.
Yeah.
And I sold it. I shouldn't have sold it.
badass guitar.
I wish I've never sold it. It was unbelievable. The pickups in it, in particular, in this particular guitar, were just unbelievable sounding. Why did I sell it? I don't know. I wish I had my very first amp too, which was Silverface Deluxe Reverb.
Oh yeah,
and I had it with a Music Master guitar.
Oh yeah,
maybe late '60s or early '70s Music Master guitar. Right. I wish I had them in the original condition.
Right.
Today, just to have, I would, right. You know,
a little nostalgia.
I think the very first overdrive pedal I had into that Silverface was one of those plastic MXR overdrive pedals.
Yeah, I remember them well. Remember
the plastic series, whatever the Command series.
Series 2000, they're called.
And they had a whole series. Actually, there's a phaser and a flanger. Right. I later started collecting that series. I don't know why.
Series 2000.
What about you, Tom?
Oh, man. I've been, you know, dude, so many regrets. But I think top of the heap for me was I'm a big double neck fan. I love double necks. I've had piles of them, man. I had a white 74 double neck 612, EDS 1275 that had this fucking haunted bridge pickup on the sixth string. It would stop traffic when you raked the chord. It's fucking crazy. And then I went to a guitar show and I found a 59 double neck, which is one of the rarest guitars, you know, hollow body double neck that Gibson made. I was so thrilled to even have the thing because they were so rare. And I thought, you can't have two double necks. So I sold the 74. But I sold that damn 74 that sounded amazing. It sounded way better than the 59. And God, I don't know why the fuck I sold that. That thing sounded so good, man. Jesus. I should have kept that one. It had the bridge pickup of doom on the sixth string, man. Oh God, it was nice.
Yeah, that's great. Those things, man, they're regret. Let's see. I already did that one. Roger Datt, he gave a super chat, but no question. And then I see the question right here. Thanks for a great show once again, Dave. Would you consider building a stereo power amp?
Yeah. There you go. A la
Egnator Randall EL84 6L switchable, six switchable, pretty please.
Probably not. I wish I could say that would be a huge market.
Right.
But in reality, it won't be. There was a time when it would have been, and that would have been great. And I definitely have some strong ideas. I wouldn't make it switchable or anything like that, but I'd just make it sound really good.
Yeah, man.
I always literally wanted two Marshall power sections in a rack mount power amp, you know?
Right.
But no one ever really totally made it just right.
What about making a badass fucking stereo tube receiver for your hi-fi, man? You ever done that?
I've never done it. I guess I could do it.
You could do that.
Here's the problem. That qualifies as do it for me.
Right.
And if it's doing it for me, it'll never, ever, ever get done.
Right.
Right. It won't ever get done unless I pay someone else to do it for me.
Right. Right.
I don't have the time to do my own stuff.
Yeah,
I mean, I work as it is. I work 6 days a week, probably more than 6 days a week, because I'm doing emails and crap all the time.
Right.
I mean, I don't know. This is. I have no hobby. I have no life.
Right. Right.
I have nothing.
What's that old saying about the shoemaker's kids' shoes? You know that old saying? Like, you'll never have time to satisfy your needs. Take care of the business.
Right? Well, no, because I take like 2 days to do work on something for myself all day for 2 days. That's a lot of money to lose.
Right. Yeah. Opportunity costs.
Yeah. It's the same thing. There's a guy, there's a repair guy in Las Vegas, Carl Popick. And Carl's a great repair guy. If anyone's in Las Vegas and needs stuff done, hit me up and I'll give you his information. But Carl sent me his Soldano preamp and he goes, "Can you mod this for me?" He goes, "I know I could do it, but I just will never do it. So can you just do it?" I'll pay you.
I'll pay you to do it.
Yeah. I'll pay you to do it. I'm like, okay, sure, no problem. Yes. And he was happy and everything's great, you know?
Right.
That's funny. Here's another Carl. Carl Engstrom. What is your favorite overdrive on a slightly hairy amp?
Yeah, man, there's a lot of great ones, man. I mean, ODR1, Lightspeed, Analog Man, King of Tone, Boss, GE7, EQ, Roger Mayer, Voodoo 1, all that shit works for me, you know.
I like what would you say is a good pedal to use on a top boost overdriven circuit?
Like an old AC30. Man, those amps distort so beautifully just on their own, man.
That
would be I wouldn't really think to distort those very much because like I said, I think of the AC30 as a giant mixing console. I plug in all three channels and just use the volume controls to mix to the most amazing sound. I mean, they're all in phase do you ever notice how some Fenders are out of phase when you jump channels, Dave?
They're not. It depends on what AC30 you're talking. They're not all in phase.
Man, okay.
If it has a top boost channel in it, that would not be in phase.
Yeah.
A normal channel. Doesn't have the top boost in it, then yeah, it would be.
Right. I've had good luck with those jumping channels on those. What about fuzz pedals? What's your favorite fuzz pedal? What do you guys like for those?
You know, the Analog Man Sunface.
Sunface is great.
I've got that.
You know, I also like really fucked up broken fuzzes. I'm a big fan of that stuff. So, Death by Audio pedals. Death by Audio makes some killer fuzzes, like the Fuzz War. That's a killer pedal. Apocalypse, I think that was a killer pedal.
Yeah.
I like weird broken fuzzes a lot.
Yeah.
Even the original Zvex, you know, the Fuzz Factory.
That's a great.
That's a cool pedal.
Great.
Really cool. Overdrives. To answer the other question for me, I mean, boosting. I do like amp overdrive the most, but I understand.
Yeah.
The purpose of certain pedals for certain colors, like a great old treble booster into certain amps, money, great stuff.
Yeah.
A great fuzz face into amps is great stuff. You know, a great fuzz face type thing, great stuff. A cool 808 tube screamer just boosted a little bit, just hitting the amp a little bit more, giving it that little slight mid range bump.
Yep,
really cool.
Multivox big jam. You ever tried that?
Which one?
We were trying to multivox big jam overdrive.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Those are fucking rad, man.
Man, there's a lot of weird ones I've come across over the years that are just like plug it in and going, man, that's cool. I'm not sure what I'd use it for, but fuck, that's cool.
Yeah, right.
You know.
Yeah.
Then a recent one. I was kind of late to the game on this, and he's a friend of mine, but the Cusack pedal company, John Cusack.
Yeah.
He's actually a manufacturer for a variety of pedals for other people.
Great actor too.
Great actor too.
I don't have
same guy though. John makes one called a Screamer Fuzz, Cusack Screamer Fuzz.
Yeah.
And it's a combination of like this crazy tube screamer circuit with like a fuzz knob too.
Yeah.
And it does this weird thing, man. It tightens it up, but that gives it this liquidy fuzz thing that's, man, it's really unique sounding to me. That's a huge favorite.
What's a piece of gear that if you had a million of them, you could sell them all tomorrow in LA? What does everybody want? I can tell you what it is in Nashville.
Well, I can tell you this, that it seems like everything now.
Okay.
Like everything has gone crazy through the roof. And often on our shows, I've mentioned things, then all of a sudden the prices went up. Could sell a million of them right now. Everything seems to be selling right now.
Every day, right?
Okay. You know, it's kind of insane. I sold a few things during this pandemic that I just had laying around, and just like they just disappeared in a day or two.
Yeah.
I put up 10 things, it's gone.
Yeah.
And man, what's, I mean, you know,
your BE Mini.
Crap. Well, yeah, but that's,
it just sold out like that.
Sold out like that. Correct. It will serve its purpose. The BE Mini was like this little amp I made. It's like a little practice amp, you know, it's like this big and it looks, it's a little Tolaxed head.
Yeah.
You see the thing, you're like, oh, I don't care what it is. I want it.
Right.
You know, because
it's, you can make four of those,
it's,
man,
so small. Yeah. And you know, and it's, there's so there, by the way, with that amp, there is going to be other brand versions of that coming.
Oh, okay.
So can't say what other brands, but they might be associated with Boutique Amps Distribution. So,
right, yes.
So there's going to be some other brands. So you'll be able to collect the whole collection, right, of them.
Right. Nice.
Nice. Nice little line.
I mean, you know, I don't know. Everything sells. Marshalls are through the roof.
Yeah.
Vintage Marshall prices, or even stuff that's sort of vintage. Dumb prices. Dumb prices on stuff.
Right.
Anything EVH related.
Anything related. I've been talking with everyone about this, and everything is back ordered. Mm-hmm. Everything, no one has stock on anything. Our lead times have gone through the roof.
Right.
It's kind of a disaster right now.
Yeah.
But and unfortunately, people, you're going to see prices going up on every product from every manufacturer, because they're all wood prices to make cabinets.
Right.
Doubled?
Oh, dude.
Maybe more than doubled.
Yeah.
So, you know, what you pay for a $35 sheet of Baltic birch, and and now it's a $70 sheet.
Sure.
That's a hard.
Yeah.
And if, say, a sheet, say you have a smaller cabinet that doesn't cost as much, and it takes about a sheet to make it, because it's a 4x4 sheet we're talking here.
Right.
And it goes up $40. I can't eat it, you know?
Or you're going to pass it on.
No.
Can't eat it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Unfortunately, you can't. I mean, and then, well, everything's gone up, labor, everything.
Sure.
Across the board.
Yep.
Across the board, everything known to man. Glue shortages to glue the Tolex on the cabinets.
Really?
I'm not joking.
Knobs are crippled.
I'm not joking. you know, for a minute there, we were like, well, we might be out of business in a second because we don't have any glue.
Right.
That's ridiculous.
What's this guy?
Where's the glue come from?
This chip here. What's this chip? What's this mean?
Oh, Dave, does the BE Mini use the TPA 3116 class D chip?
I'm pretty sure that's the exact chip it uses. Mm. This is a Class D power amp board you're referring to, the chip on the power amp board. Although I'm not glancing at it right now, so I can't remember off the top of my head. So, okay. Yeah, there's the main circuit board, which is all the analog parts, and then there's the Class D power amp board that's in there.
Right.
Dave, you should charge. Dave, you should charge for mentions, and I will pay you to mention my online garage sale items.
You know, it's crazy. Well,
okay.
I'll tell you what the fucking, in Nashville, there's things that I get calls for every day. Princeton reverbs, man.
Yeah.
Really? All anybody wants in this town is a Princeton reverb, man. I mean,
portable, light, easy to carry.
Yes. I mean, yeah.
Boom, done.
Yeah. That, old Gibson acoustics, and old Fender basses. That's what everybody wants in this town. Hmm. I get calls every day for like, Book, you know anybody that's got a cool old P bass? You know anybody that's got a cool old Gibson acoustic? That's what people want, man, around here. I just fucking, I'm embarrassed to admit this. I just paid $3,000 for a fucking dead clean blackface Princeton reverb.
Oh my God. Embarrassed
to admit this. And I had to talk the guy down from 35.
That's where they're
at. Really how much they're going for right now?
The blackface
Prince. Wow.
Dead clean, dead straight, but holy
shit. So what you're saying is I should make the Prince
thing. Oh, man. I mean, that was a $500 amp my whole
life. That's it. I'm making a Princeton.
Oh, man, dude.
Well, when I was talking before about that Tweed, the 55, 56 Tweed champ.
Yeah.
They're like over $3,000 now, $3,500.
Well, that's ridiculous, too. I remember buying one for $300.
Right.
Yeah. Prince is an 8-watt amp, right? Yeah.
Right, exactly. We got Vinny. What's up, Vinny?
Vincent. How are you?
Thanks for the super chat, amigo. How are you? Question for Tom. Is there an easy way to apply theory to chord shapes? I have a ton of theory in my head, but not good applying it to building chords, thirds, sevenths, etc.
Is there an easy way to apply theory to chord shapes? Man, I think I'm a little too buzzed to answer that question.
Hey, Vinny, I have a perfect person for you to ask. Hit up Sammy Bowler.
Okay. Yeah. Right.
Sammy will be able to answer that for you. Right. Actually, I've heard him answer this question.
Right. Okay, good.
So
I don't think about shit in those terms, man. That's very foreign to me. I appreciate the question, but I don't really know how to answer that one. That's a tough one.
Cool.
We'll text Sammy later.
Yeah,
Sammy's going to be out here soon.
Right.
All right. When?
Yeah, he's right before you come, Mark.
Oh, right. He's leaving before I
yeah, get when are you
coming? Though, man. Fuck, I'll be out there
June 10th.
Mm-hmm.
June 10th, I'll be out
there. Oh, yeah. Sammy's leaving the 5th or 6th.
Oh, that's too bad.
Dave,
can you talk about the Friedman Naked amp?
I also wonder if people are asking this because I think Michael Nielsen just posted a video about that amp that you can't buy.
Yeah, that sounded good.
Billy Howardell on the show. So Billy Howardell, I've known Billy forever. And when Billy when did it start? I remember him borrowing a Naylor amplifier from me, and Billy loved that amp and it really worked for him. So at that point in time, he asked me, can you like mod this Marshall I have to kind of do what this Naylor does? Although it was a 100-watt Marshall. And I go, well, yeah. So I did, but it was a little different. I made it a little different. And so, so he loved it, and that became his main amp on every record that he's ever recorded.
Yeah.
And then he asked me to make some amps for the road that were total custom amps.
Yeah,
that were rack mountable, and they were all handmade. And I called them these naked amps. The reason I called them the naked amps is literally these amps I made for him were like bare black chassis. Some weird knobs that I found, and no writing on them whatsoever. And they were just completely naked. So that's how the naked name came about. And then later I made a limited run of them in the mid 2000s.
Yeah.
A lot of them went to Japan.
Yeah.
And all handmade, every single one of them. And I mean, when I mean handmade, I mean drilled the chassis.
Right.
Handmade.
Right.
And several other artists over the years bought them, handmade ones. And then I kind of stopped doing them. Then when I did Friedman, I made a run for a little while, but they weren't the most popular.
Right.
Then I kind of discontinued it. Yeah. And now there's renewed interest again.
You still have the first amp you ever made?
I don't have any amps.
No.
Of my own.
You remember the first amp you ever made?
Like
not a mod, like an actual amp.
No, I mean, amp that I made, it probably was one of these nakeds.
Really?
Yeah. From scratch? Yeah, probably.
Mm-hmm. What year are we talking here, man?
Early 2000s.
Yeah. I remember.
I was messing with amps before that, mods and things, but like from scratch.
I saw. It reminds me of. I was at, you mentioned Rumble Seat. You know, a minute ago, Elliot's an old buddy of mine. I love Elliot. I was in there a while back, a couple, like a year and a half ago or something. And they had one of those really early Paul Reed Smith. You ever seen those guitars he made? They look like hideous Les Paul Jr. sort of. They had one of these early, worth a fortune, right? Because it's like this crazy early prototype thing. They had it there, and I took a picture of it, and I sent it to Paul, and I said, in a text, I said, I can picture you there, Paul, a lonely guy in your garage with your tools, building this guitar. And he wrote back, I should have burned the thing.
And that sounds like Paul.
Right. I mean, it made me laugh, man. I mean, he's hilarious. But yeah, you know, like people were paying zillions of dollars for these original prototypes, but he was just figuring out how to make a guitar. You know what I mean? Yeah. So right. Funny, man. God.
Yeah.
That's funny. Amazing.
Leo Amuedo, thanks for the super sticker, which I think your question is below here. Sound is in your hand, guys. Sorry for the amp makers and the guitar builders, but it is what it is. Well, yeah, I mean, there's a lot to it.
What did he say?
There's two components to this.
Sound is in the hands.
There's two components to this. I mean, yes, tone is in your hand, but also a piece of gear can create tone.
Yeah.
So a great player's hand that has great tone can maybe coax a tone out of almost anything.
Yeah, that's fair.
But it's a lot better if they plays it through an amp that has good tone.
Right.
If he plays through it, I mean, I did this. I watched Eddie Van Halen play through a Line 6 practice amp, right?
That says it all, man.
Yeah. I mean, I watched Eddie Van Halen play through a Line 6 practice amp, and guess what? He sounded like Eddie Van Halen. He sounded really good. It sounded great. Does it sound better through the amp he played on stage? Sure. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. You know? Yes, it does. So it's twofold, you know, it's a little bit of each.
Yeah. Totally. Carl Engstrom, thanks for the super chat. What about hitting an HBE with a touch of Harry Love? Not sure what that means, but
I don't know.
No, it sounds dirty. Sounds dirty.
Very dirty.
Yeah. Very dirty. I don't know, man.
Yeah.
Okay. He paid again. Well, thanks for the super chat, man. We agree with you to some degree.
Yeah. Yes.
Let's see what else we got here. I just bought the Greer Overdrive that Tom mentioned because I know what's going to happen. 200 is out the door on reverb. Watch what happens tomorrow.
Yeah, 250, 300. Yeah.
You're going to love that thing, man. That was a smart purchase. You're going to love that.
It's like I haven't looked recently, but I remember saying on the air that I liked the Digitech Polara reverb.
Yeah, I've heard those. Yeah.
They sound really great. They have a great, it's Lexicon algorithms in that pedal, and right. They have a great plate and a great little spring, and they just sound really good. I mean, like, throw your Hall of Fames out the door because those are awful,
right.
And use one of those. But I said that on air several times, and I'm literally, I looked after a while, I'm like, wow, it's going for that much now.
Yeah,
Ryzen on reverb.
Yeah, I don't have it lately. I'm scared.
I want to make sure we mention Tom. So you're touring with Ann Wilson. That's coming up next.
Wow, month. I wouldn't call it a tour. It's like 4 gigs. Is that a tour?
4 gigs. All right, that's 4 gigs. All right,
that's a COVID tour.
We're gonna spend longer than we are actually playing. Yeah.
Hey, but even still, and then you also you've got two albums coming out, right? Mm-hmm. So
you've got never made an album for myself, and I got two coming out now at age 52. Isn't that crazy?
Uh-oh. So you got the homeschooling album. You got to grab that.
Going off. You hear that alarm?
Oh, is that the alarm?
I don't know what that is. I better fix that.
Okay.
Let me go check and see what that is. Hold on.
Go ahead. No problem. So while he's doing that, Tom's going to be coming out with his homeschooling jams. So he's working on that. And then also it's called with the album with Trip called Trip the Witch with Dean DeLeo. So make sure you guys check that out. And We will be announcing our 100th show guest some
hopefully
point
soon. It'll be someone good, guys.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I was trying to act like we actually had somebody, but
we have tentative ideas. My
arm just went off. I fixed it. It was, I don't know what the fuck that was.
What happened?
Just like my fire alarm started going off for some reason, but that just goes. I don't know what it's what's so strange. I have no strange. Idea. They're probably smoking weed in there or something.
Could be.
Hold on.
You're 85.
With the kids.
where's your friend?
Yeah.
All of a sudden, social services is showing up in your doorstep.
That's a joke, guys.
That's a joke.
Total joke.
Right. So, yeah. What was I saying, Dave?
You were talking about the albums coming out.
Right. So, we got two albums coming out, Tom.
Man, yeah. It could be battery low. The guy said battery. It might be that. But, yeah. Yeah, the one is just my a bunch of my intro jams for my loops for my show, mm-hmm. and the other one's the same with Dean, you know. But here's what I'm going to do with the stroke of genius from my caveman brain. I'm going to make my solo album, right, of my jams with my horrible playing on it, and I'm also going to release one where it's just the beds. And you could sell it where people were going to play. You could play their own solos over it, right?
Well, that's cool. That's cool.
Great. Not a very original concept, but I think it'll be cool because my whole show is like an educational sort of, you know.
Right, teaching, exactly.
Right? So I'm not trying to be cool or anything. So I'm not an artist. You know, I'm just trying to help people get better at guitar. So I'm cool with making this album that sell two versions of it where – it's just, you know, you could listen to me do it or you could do it yourself, you know?
Right.
Whatever you like. Yeah, man. That'll be good.
That's cool.
So throw that out there. So I haven't mentioned that on any of my shows yet, but I think that'd be a cool idea. I think people would like that, you know?
Totally. Yeah. Especially because you have such a large guitar audience base.
Yeah, they're all guitar nerds, just like me. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah.
So I know we've gone quite long.
We probably ought to wind it down, boys.
Yeah. And I've we're gone good. Through all the super chats. And I know we can go, I know we could have a part two. How about we do that?
We could go until 4 a.m. if you guys want, you know.
No, it's not too far off from
me. We have done close to that.
We have. It's the longest show you guys ever did.
Four, almost 5 hours.
Jesus, man.
Oh, was that John Sir or was that
John Sir?
Or was the Jakey Lee episode?
Were you guys doing blow or something?
No. That was just alcohol. It was early in
4 hours, too?
Jakey Lee was about 4 hours, but the one with John Sir was close to five.
Here's a very wise piece of wisdom.
Yes.
Don't go drinking with Jakey Lee.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Just not bad at you. Bad idea.
He can hurt you.
If you were to watch the episode that we had with him, you would see where it went.
Does he hold his booze like a professional?
He's definitely a professional.
He definitely held it. Yeah, he did well.
He definitely held it. He held it a lot better than I did.
Okay. Yes. Yes. Yes.
So, yes. Yeah. It was an ugly evening that continued after the show.
And well, it's all,
I'll tell
it's
you
all
what,
there for in the public to see.
you guys throw a hell of a party. I've had a good time here tonight, man.
Awesome, man.
It's great to have you on, Tom.
Great to have you on.
Welcome anytime. Hope to see you in Florida.
Man. I'll hook you up, man. Get you going.
That'll be awesome. Love to see you. So, guys, we're going to announce our 100th show at some point, as soon as we get that booked up. And then I've got some other folks that I want to get.
You gonna throw a shindig for the 100th show?
Yeah.
Well, we're shooting for an artist that's hard to get. So we'll see.
We'll see. We'll see if it happens.
But if not, we have a couple other ideas.
Yeah.
Right.
We'll make it work. But then we got some other people lined up for 101, 102. And so check us out on social media. You guys check out Homeschooling with Tom on his channel. Also, and check out Sweetwater. And have a great weekend, guys. Yes. Tom, hang on while we say goodbye, all right?
Yes, sir.
Take care, buddy.
Take care, guys.